Welcome to the fourth episode of Bits and Pieces. This is a podcast about why work is not a job, friendships, and riding unicorns. We are your today's hosts. I am Luki.
And I'm Toby.
And as usual, it has been a very long time since we last talked to you. We promised to get better, but we were busy, right, with interesting stuff, Toby.
Let's straight jump into my topic. This time it's banks. I wanted to talk about this one for ages because it accompanied me
for ages,
obviously, since end of March, actually. The thing is, we organized the foundation of a daughter company for a foreign partner of ours. So foreign partner wanted to found a company in Finland, and we dealt with the trade register and consequently also with the bank. And well, the trade register was very easy as usual. You fill out some papers and hand them in, and basically that's it. It's quite a nice process in Finland. We already wrote about it at some point, I think.
Yeah.
With the bank, well, it wasn't so easy this time, because till now we had the luck to only found companies where physical people were involved as shareholders, so the capital and the beneficiary could be traced super easily. Whereas in this time we had a foreign entity which was a company, so it got a little bit more fishy for everybody to figure out. And banks are under very, very tight regulation for money laundering reasons.
And you so have to admit that founding an Italian subsidiary in Finland does start interesting.
Yeah, they had a lot of questions. There was somebody coming with money and wanted to put money somewhere. And they were like, no, nobody ever comes here to bring money. They usually want money. And so we better ask and make everything complicated and be super annoying about stuff. But I didn't say that right now. It was more, they followed the rules, which I find okay, because money laundering is evil and we don't want any evil.
No money laundering either.
No money laundering. But then there is a lot about how a bank makes its own processes, how they define, how the workflows go. And there I have to say Finnish banks weren't the most efficient in this case.
I think one of the most or the biggest problems was actually that we never knew what was going to happen. I mean, it's not a problem if you know that it takes 2 months because this and that is going to happen, but it was pretty much on a daily basis. Oh, it's all going to be ready tomorrow. And then, oh no, actually it's not, we cannot do it at all, or come back in a couple of weeks and we might tell you what more we need and so on. And that was the most frustrating part of it all.
That's true. The communication process was terribly inefficient and also not clear. So when I tried to establish the bank account at the end of last March, my expectations were also wrong, because I assumed it would be easier. So I told them, hey, I have everything you need, which I in the end really had already at that point. And could we do that today or in the next 2 days so that I can fly back to Italy and work on other projects? And yeah, they were like super defensive about it. Oh, what is this? Of course.
We ignorant immigrants.
We didn't know you shouldn't have money for a bank account. But then as it turned out, they needed a lot of officialized stuff, because I sent them some papers. They said they're going to look at it and it looks like everything is going to be okay, but it will take longer. So this was acceptable for me. But they didn't get back to me for about 2 to 3 weeks. And only then to write me with a one-liner, hey, we decided we are not interested and best of luck for everything you want to do. And well, this wasn't exactly satisfactory for me. So
yeah,
I had to push it a little more, try also different banks, and I quickly got to the result that this isn't going to be very easy. And then we had to get into details, like what was the problem. So the problem was they didn't understand why we wanted to invest in Finland. And there I could explain, yeah, it's because we are here and we are related to this other company in Italy and we are here already since several years and it's a connected business and so on and so on. But the problem was, why didn't they ask? They just refused with out of ignorance, and that's something a good business shouldn't do.
I think this is a really good case of bad communication, internal and external communication, and we'll have another word on that a little later in the podcast.
Yeah. And then we step by step managed to solve all those issues, but I have to say it took us till end of June to finally get a fully functioning bank account. And that's really annoying because here in Finland, everything goes over the bank account. So you need the bank account as an authentication service to use government services, declare taxes, and so on and so on. And then it's not really good if you don't have one. So you are basically completely blocked. And there I really think banks need to rework their processes a lot to ensure that these things don't happen, because they make customers' lives incredibly difficult and also their own lives difficult, because they internally have to also fight with different departments. At least I had a long talk with the clerk who was in charge of our case, and he then explained me why everything took so long, because he had to deal with the legal department, with some other account opening authority and whatever. And
thinking of all the costs that this generates for them internally, even just all the burn working hours for something that should be the easiest for them to do, opening a bank account or a bank. That should be the easiest thing.
And what was really frustrating then for me was that I had a lot of documentation already from minute one on, which was actually better in quality than the documentation they asked of me, and that they weren't flexible enough to even take a look at the other kind of documentation, because I had a guarantee from the Italian bank. I had a reference from the Italian auditing company, which is KPMG. So it's a really known name. Probably they deal with those people every day. So they could have taken their word as word in gold for the whole process to speed it up, but they didn't, because they were like, this is our internal guidelines and we follow them to every point, even though in this case it was would have been more efficient to do otherwise.
I think this, or it's not the first bank account that we started in Finland, but it got almost more difficult with every time we did. When we opened the first company, it was all a lot more personal as well. You had one person that you talked to and they were responsible for you, but all the banks somehow started closing down and closing down more, and you talk to some people who don't have any authority, or you just send messages to some system and you never get an answer and all that stuff. It really took a turn to the worse over the last 4 or 5 years.
That's definitely true. In this case, especially at the beginning, the contact person changed 3 times. That also didn't really help in a more complex case. And also that you never meet the person in person, who you deal with. You do everything only over the phone and via email, and that sometimes doesn't really help to speed things up.
Yeah, because it would be so easy if you just sit down with someone for half an hour and they know you and you explain them the whole case, then they might just say, okay, we know everything, which is in fact how it worked the first time. But this time it was all a lot more annoying.
Yeah.
What can you say? But we have the bank account now, so we are half happy. We just wasted a lot of time and a lot of other people's time. But this wasn't the only annoying thing that we dealt with recently. I mean, we didn't really deal with this next topic just by ourselves, but the last podcast episode, we talked about the Finnish elections and how everything took a little turn towards the right. The very nationalist party, the Finns, got a lot more or a lot stronger in the parliament. And recently, their member of parliament, Olli Immonen, made it to the headlines. He wrote a post on Facebook declaring war on multiculturalism in Finland, which, of course, is a terrible thing to say. As a politician, you cannot really say something like that ever. He was basically saying that, the Finns need to stand united and fight this monster of multiculturalism. And he sees that then the nationalist or the Finnish nation can prosper again. And a lot of other really terrible crap. Sorry my language, but it was just a terrible, terrible text on Facebook. Yeah. And this led to a lot of protests all around. It made it to the headlines. And there was a huge rally about this. There were 10,000 people going to the streets around Helsinki, which is really nice to see because, of course, we as people who move to Finland as immigrants somehow are really affected about this kind of thoughts put into people's mind. Also in our company, we have people from all over the world. So we meet we live multiculturalism every day, all the time.
Yeah, I was quite proud when I saw all these protests in the international media, because they gave at first, with the reason for the protest, a very dark picture of Finland, of the current situation. But with the people rising up, they also showed that this isn't the Finland, that this isn't how Finland wants to be depicted and remembered in the world.
Exactly. Yeah, and I think that for me is also the nicest thing to see, that although a politician is saying something silly like this, you see that most of the people, or a lot of people, are totally against this, and this is just a silly opinion and nobody wants to be seen like this from abroad. Because I have to say, if something like this would have made it to the news a few years ago before we moved to Finland, I'm not sure how welcome I would have found myself moving here. I don't know. Of course, then seeing also how the people protest on the streets, maybe that gives you or encourages you. But if you think that everything maybe is going to take a turn towards that direction, that's not really something that encourages you to move to a place.
No, and if I remember how we chose the place, how we looked up all the different countries, how open they are towards foreigners, how their economies work, how welcoming in general their systems are, such news would have really disturbed us. I'm very, very sure, because we did our research well, and I also think other people who take similar choices do it in a similar way.
Yeah, we did the research well, and also in the end, the decision we took of coming here was a lot about just a gut feeling, because we felt welcome about the people we knew from here and so on. And yeah, like, you can, like, this is difficult to put into any picture that makes sense, I have to say. And it doesn't help anyone by writing such an article. I mean, what do you want to achieve? A few idiots who are like, yay, let's go back to some very nationalistic Finland. Like, I don't see much point in this. And as a politician, you shouldn't be allowed saying this. And what's still a little weird is that the Finns party hasn't totally officially reacted to this. I think the leader of the party, Timo Soini, never really said officially. He didn't take position. Of course, it's difficult. You cannot attack someone of your own party officially, but on the other hand, as a party, you don't really want to be connected to this kind of talk. And also, that guy who wrote the post actually has been seen saluting neo-Nazis and all that crap. So he's just a really weird person, I guess. And it would be good for the Finns as a party to maybe go get over this.
Yeah, to get rid of him.
To get rid of him or do something. They did start, however, now some internal program that helps them. At least they're about to start. I don't know if it was a reaction to all these scandals now, or if it's something that they had planned before, but they will start some internal schooling on what their ideology is, what their goals are, and I guess to find out who are a little over the top and maybe sort them out before they make it to the top of the party. I'm not sure, but maybe it's good starting with this kind of program internally.
Yeah, because at least I saw the Finns party as always, of course, for Finland standards, extreme right-wing, but compared to international standards of extreme right-wing, it's quite a soft touch. It's more frustrated people than hardcore neo-Nazi right-wing extremism.
Definitely. I think it, like, this whole scandal, if you can call it like that, it makes everything sound a lot worse than it actually is, I think. So yeah. Somehow maybe it's good that it has become a public topic, because then people started talking about, maybe they formed opinions that they would not have formed before and so on. But all in all, this somehow also got blown up a little bit.
It somehow was a wake-up call for the country. Hey, is this really the direction we are going to go to? Because then we are in that light, and do we want to be seen like that? So, and I think the people, or most of the people, chose not to be like that, and this will affect future political movements and presentations and decisions.
Yeah, I think that's a good summing up. And let's move to nice topics.
Yeah,
let's
do that.
Talk about something that was fun.
Yeah, probably the most fun thing I did in the last months since our last episode was that I participated in an obstacle race. We already talked about those in a former episode. And that obstacle race is called Xletics. It was in Tyrol in Austria, somewhere near Innsbruck in the mountains. Mm-hmm. It was, from data point of view, it was really quite tough because it was 16 kilometers and the official height difference we had to cover, because it was in mountains, was 800 meters, but it turned out to be over 1,000 meters. So really a lot of hiking, basically. We were a group of people. It was generally a group competition, so the overall goal was not to make an awesome time, but to that everybody, every member of the group gets through. There was even a discount policy on that, so if you are at minimum 10 team members and everybody gets through, everybody gets, I think it was €5 discount or something like that.
So
yeah,
got money back or good money discount back in drinking, or how did they pay it off?
Well, the drinks, once you completed the race, you got a free beer. That was nice.
That sounds like an Austrian race.
it's a German thing. It used to be called CrossFit Challenge, which means like badass in shape, something, but they changed it to Xletics because it sounds so much better. Not. And well, during this race we had of course a lot of obstacles. There were about 25 of them, if I remember correctly. Among them, very large hurdles, crossing small streams, doing some monkey bars. And what was quite funny was a 4-meter jump on a large air-filled mattress.
Nice.
That was really fun. You could do some moves. It was the first, you could only take one jump, so you didn't know exactly the outcome. So I didn't go too crazy.
If I remember right, there is a video about this that they will, of course, link as well. And if you do well, you can spot Toby doing his move.
Yeah, but that was on the coolest thing, which was towards the end. That was the long water slide down the mountain.
Even different slide.
I loved it. Yeah, that was really cool. But the best thing about it, I would say, was the scenery. So the start was on 2,000 meter sea level height, so really in the Alps. Then it went up to almost 3,000 meters, the course. And it was somehow between two catchment lakes for hydro energy production. So really these long, big lakes with walls, dam walls.
Yeah.
And we ran on those dams. And you can see it on the video. It was really beautiful as a scenery. And I would recommend it, especially to people who are not from that area, to maybe participate at such a race. It's not so terribly tough because you can take your time. You can, as a team, help each other to cover the obstacles. So it's more of a fun competition, I would say. Of course, you need to be a bit in shape, but not too crazy.
I think I'm a little upset I didn't participate in the end, because the video looks really good and the scenery just breathtaking.
Next year.
I guess in general, this might even be a really good team building activity, even as an office or something. If you're an office that's half in shape or you have a few CrossFitters in your team, this might be
I wouldn't know such an office, but yeah.
I'm sure there is. There is some offices nowadays.
Yeah.
But I also did some fun stuff over the last month because we had holidays with our company. So I had time to just find some new hobbies. And one of them that I picked up is Japanese fly fishing. It's called Tenkara. I don't know how you pronounce it. I could have prepared a little better, but Tenkara, I guess, works Tenkara. And it's probably the most basic way of fly fishing there is. It's around 200 years old, and in principle, you just have a rod that's around 4 meters long, maybe. It's very flexible and very thin and very light, and it just has then a line that's pretty much the same length as the rod. So you just have it hanging down the rod like if you do normal angling, but you have a fly in the front and not the worm. And then the whole movement that you do is that you hold the rod in front of you and you do a very, very small movement up and down with your hand. It's almost like moving it from, let's say, a 10 o'clock position to an 11 o'clock position. And that way the fly is going to jump up and down just a tiny, tiny little bit on the surface of the water, which creates these beautiful ripples and it makes fish go crazy. And I did that a couple of times now, and one time where it made the most sense doing it probably was in Lapland. We did a trip to Lapland and there we did it on a small river. And this fishing technique is pretty much made for fishing in small rivers. So you just stand at the water front or you stand inside the river if you have the proper gear, which I didn't have. But anyway, I was fishing down from some small bridge and they even had the luck of fishing an extremely extremely rare Arctic char there, and the trout we got as well, which was really cool. So we caught a couple of fish and we grilled them afterwards in the fire, the whole proper outdoor experience. But this Tenkara fly fishing is a beautiful sport and I can recommend it to anyone, just as a balancing act to sitting around in an office most of the time, because somehow it takes the concentration because you need to really focus on the fly, but you forget everything else there is. And it's a lot simpler than real fly fishing. And also the equipment you need is so small that you can almost always take it with you. It's really a great discovery that I made.
Yeah, it's one of these simple Japanese things. I just love the thought of it. I mean, I also tried it. You showed me how to do it, and it's so incredibly simple. It's like a children's game, but I guess it brings the child back in an adult when doing it.
Yeah, somehow it does, and it's just nice to see this plain simplicity. If you look at that gear that you need, which is pretty much the rod that like is a telescopic rod, so it becomes tiny. And then you have the line extra, but that's all you need. And then if you compare it to a conventional rod with all the different floats and all the different hooks and everything else that you have, you pretty much carry around the small suitcase with you all the time. It's just great. Yeah, how simple something can be, because it's essentially the most basic fishing you can do.
Cool. We definitely need to go more often.
Yeah, we might tell about more fish that we caught in the future.
Yeah, and we need to our Helsinki listeners, we are in need of suggestions for fishing places here in Helsinki. Where are the good spots where you can catch fish? Because we are not that experienced yet, and till now here in Helsinki, our catch was rather limited, I would say.
That is true. So please send us your best fishing spots in Helsinki. I'm sure all our listeners are really interested in this information. Thanks. Yeah. Okay, but let's move to a very current, really big tech topic, maybe. It has made the news just a few days ago, which is that Google divorced itself from itself. If you can say that. In other words, Google now renamed itself Alphabet and made Google its own daughter company.
Yeah. So Google is its own father.
Yeah. Now maybe we made enough silly jokes and you can explain what actually happened. Yeah. But yeah, Google is now Alphabet. So the original founders of Google are Larry Page. He was the one, I think...
Larry Page is now heading Alphabet. He was before
the one writing a letter what made them do this decision and everything. And he now moved from being the CEO of Google to being the CEO of Alphabet. And Alphabet, is the concern or the company.
The holding company
that incorporates Google and a lot of their other endeavors that they already had before. And pretty much they did it so that they have more freedom in starting new businesses that are stronger by themselves. If we think about Nest or also Google's experimenting into the health sector and a lot of other things. So it's, them somehow creating their playground of different companies. Google, the way we know it with its with their most important services, like the search, of course, and the Gmail and all those Office products. That became its own company, so it's really clear what their focus is. But then within Alphabet, they can put a lot more money onto different things. And they also wanted to have then different CEOs to those different companies and just have them being stronger brands by themselves.
Yep. And one of the main reasons for that was stock market strategy, because stock markets punished Google for their endeavors they had in the last years. So Google had a very, very well-functioning core business, just economically speaking. So their search, ads, maps, apps, and all that stuff brought in a lot of money, but they weren't too transparent about where they gonna invest the money. They are gonna get it from stock market investors, and did all this Google Health and automated cars experiments. But those experiments, of course, don't satisfy short-term investors. They can be potentially interesting for strategic long-term investors who see, hey, maybe in 20 years development goes in this direction, but not necessarily for the guy who wants to make a short profit. And so they lost a lot of investors for that reason. And with the new structure, they are going to satisfy the short-term investors or investors who are generally internet tech investors. And they are going to find separate investors for the other areas with other risk reward schemes. So it's not, Google isn't such a huge portfolio anymore by itself, but
it makes it a lot more clear and a lot more measurable where you put your money at an investor and how much you get out of it. Yeah.
There was also some discussion in newspapers that this might be, this split up might be an answer to the desires of the EU Commission to split up Google, because there is an ongoing, not a trial, but maybe an examination if they want to split up Google. Mm-hmm. The reason for that is that Google has its powerful search, and of course it has over 90% market share there, that's known. And it is alleged that Google prefers its own content and content from related companies to other content, third-party content. And this Alphabet structure doesn't answer these problems. So Google is still under threat. So the daughter company Google is still under threat of getting split by the EU within the next years. Because they still promote their own services via the search. This won't change because of... They would have to show that they really split ownership of search and other services, which didn't happen.
In fact, Alphabet still kept the same names on the trade market. They still stuck to those old two names. So it's really a rename of the old Google and then having a new company under it that has the same name and basically is a slimmed down version of what the Google most of us know.
But generally, at least from my perspective, I think for Google this makes a lot of sense, or for Alphabet now. And it's a step in the right direction, because it was a bit confusing before for everybody.
It was. I mean, also, if you look at the stock market, they took it well. I think they went up by 6% or something, which is a big jump at once. And also what is a reason for this as well is that the founders, of course, can be a little bit more, like they can have somebody else take care of the bureaucratic business that pretty much is running. So it's more of an executive task than like reinventing the world every day. And they can actually, play with new topics that they're interested with. And they just have the money machine basically that gives them the money to do so, which is cool. And another thing is also the employees within Google, they now have an option or a better option or a more defined options, let's say, to move up. Because if they are maybe bored after 15 years of just working on the search machine, then before they were then moved to the other robotic building company or whatever. But then at some stage still there was Google with the CEO and so on, so you could never move all the way up. But now if you have a really good idea within Google, it's possible that you actually create your own project within the whole Google ecosystem. So within the Alphabet ecosystem, I'm sorry, but... So you can create your own company within there. Maybe you get financed through Google and you have a higher position than was possible before. So especially in Silicon Valley, where the talent market is always tough, this gives Google a big advantage over, or it gives them a good possibility of hiring better talent or keeping it within their own system than them going away, starting a startup somewhere else to have more power of they want to do, of the, over what they want to do.
Yeah, and I think it was also a very powerful statement for within the company internally and also to all externals. Hey, this is really our vision as founders. We really care about all these big topics, but we also want to ensure that the current machine keeps running. And I think it was good.
It's a really smart move. Yeah. I'm curious to see what's going to happen. The Alphabet website at the moment doesn't show much besides the letter of the founder and a link to the investors. I wonder if all of them knew that it was going to happen or if any of them knew it was going to happen. I mean, their share in Google just got moved into an equal share within Alphabet. So I think for them, somehow, it doesn't matter too much. But still, it might have been a funny shock to some people. And I've read a tweet by somebody who had the Twitter handle at Alphabet on Monday evening. Wow, that's a way of ending a Monday, because of course everybody was looking for at Alphabet on Twitter to find out about this new company and so on. And also talking about handles and domains, the funny thing is that they couldn't secure the alphabet.com domain. So the domain is abc.xyz. And this somehow, yeah, is a little ironic, but BMW is the owner of the alphabet.com and they're not handing it over.
Really?
It's the name of a fleet organization program or whatever that they have. And they were actually poking some fun at Alphabet with some new ads. They were like, for us, Alphabet is not just a word. And then they had a big billboard from A to Z and then something like, Y like you, because we care, and Z like Zeitgeist, and yeah, all that ridiculous stuff. It looked a little funny, but in some way it's a bold move of Google/Alphabet to say we're going to stick to a name where we don't get the main domain, which might be also somehow a trend in the future we might see, because by now so many good names are taken that you probably need to think of other.
Did you read by chance why they took that name? Because I read it and I thought it was a bit lame.
Why did it? I mean, Alphabet. Do you have the proper quote still?
Yeah, no, I have the explanation. It's because some stocks are alpha stocks. They are very, very good, the top stocks. And bet is a pun, basically. Alpha bet. So you bet on alpha stocks when you bet on them. And I thought, yeah, okay.
I think it was that plus another thing, which I'm not like.
A stock market joke. No, I don't know.
A stock market joke. And the other explanation was that it's like the alphabet is the basis of our daily communication. It's the basis of the Google algorithms. Like everything is indexed by the alphabet because language is everywhere and blah, blah, blah. I think.
I mean, then the daughter company Google should be called Alphabet. But for the holding, it doesn't make sense. But,
yeah. Placing bets on alphas. That's.
But still,
that's a way of making money.
Yeah,
but all in all, let's see where it goes. Yeah. It's an interesting development, nonetheless. But let's talk about something we have promised in the description to this podcast and many times before, which is work methods. As we mentioned before, we have a company or companies, and we have come up with some methods of our own of how we think work should be done. And we will talk about this in more detail over the more coming episodes of this podcast. But today we want to speak a little bit about communication. Already when starting this episode, we were talking about banks and how their internal communication was showing to be a problem. And we want to tell a little bit about the experiences we had over the last years and how we tried to have a really lean and working efficiently communication.
Yeah. What's certainly true for us is that we changed our tools of communication a lot of time over the last years, because I think one thing is having talking about the culture of communication. So how do you approach topics? How do you talk internally and inform people about stuff? And another thing is, what do you use for that? I think today we concentrate a little bit on that.
Yeah.
And we changed a lot in these because we started out pretty traditionally, I would say. We used email a lot for communication. And then, of course, phone, short messages, and Skype for video conferences if people are further away. But after some time, we were never really happy with emails.
So I think it also comes down to us growing as a company, and the more people you are, the more difficult communication, or the more important communication gets. Because if you're only 2, 3, 4, 5 people, then you pretty much talk face to face most of the time, and it's easy enough to remember all the information that you hear. But once you are maybe around 8, 9, 10 people, it gets tricky, because then you need to know, what did this person say to that other person? Where can I read up about what happened in that last meeting, and how do I ask that? And also, if people are working, you don't want to disturb them all the time. Run over to their desk and say, hey, I need this and that, because you might totally take them out of their concentration and so on. And that has shown to be more and more of a problem in our day-to-day life, which is why we decided at some stage to rethink it all. We didn't completely rethink it, because one tool that we had used since the beginning, we still stick to, which is Basecamp. Basecamp we use as a communication tool with clients mostly. So when we have projects running, we set up a Basecamp project. Basecamp is a project management tool. I would say it has been around since a very long time. It's quite simple with what it can do. It has a calendar and more functionality as well. You can upload files there, but mostly the way we use it is the messaging function within it, because what it does, it then sends emails to people anyway, so to clients and so on, but you still have one website with all the threads of all the information that has been shared, because otherwise you never know, did this one person save the email? Did it come to this person? That whole thing about reply all, and you don't know where it goes, and all those really silly limitations, or not silly limitations, but all the problems that you just create with emails over time, somehow we work around with Basecamp. But let's maybe talk more about the tools that we use for internal communication, which are namely Slack, and then we have Discourse, which I don't know if it really qualifies as a communication platform, but that's where all the important pieces of day-to-day communication end up sooner or later. But let's start with Slack, which we have started using around a little less than a year ago, maybe.
Is it so long already? Okay.
Maybe. I don't know, but I would say, probably it's more than over half a year at least, and we are really happy, and we don't miss all the emails we have been sending before.
Definitely.
At all.
Because before, the thing is, with the internal communication, you have such a huge inbox at some point. That combined with the external communication is just too messy. Whereas in Slack, you have a much more structured form of communication. I will explain it a little. In Slack, you have a user account then that is associated with an organization. You can have associations to more organizations, but I won't go into that. And then you can subscribe yourselves to different hashtags. So maybe you're, for example, we use a general hashtag where we put everything that doesn't go into other hashtags. Then we use a marketing hashtag for all marketing related topics and suggestions. So everybody of the team, if he finds something cool for a marketing idea or something which we could use, they can post it in there. Same for coding, same for design.
Those different channels, that's the main feature maybe, or like one of the main things, that it's almost like the old chat rooms, but you use it like you used for sending messages. And what comes on top of that is that you can have private messaging, so you can just talk privately to some of the other users, or you can create private groups as well. And maybe what makes it the nicest is that you can integrate it with a lot of different tools. So a lot of other tools that we use for our day-to-day development or talking to clients or even just a calendar, you can integrate it with Slack, which means that you can trigger some actions and you can say, for example, now when somebody puts into our remote working calendar that he's going to be abroad from some time to some other time, it automatically posts a message to Slack. So everybody who's interested about who's working from somewhere else can just look to Slack and doesn't even need to necessarily go to the calendar. The same with GitHub, which you use for version controlling. You, if there is some new issue created, it just ends up in some channel on Slack. And if somebody puts up a new version, so in some way you never need to leave Slack and you know pretty much everything else that's going on. We have integrated it with Zendesk, which is our support platform. So as soon as there is any ticket created, it ends up in Slack as well. And whoever is interested can follow up on the discussions there. And even just this, the need not to switch between a lot of different tools all the time to know what's happening, that saved so, so much time and improved our work a lot.
What I also really like is a function that you can highlight a certain set of keywords for yourself. For example, I highlight that because it's important to me, finance, budget, marketing, price, and offer. So every time when somebody writes in any Slack channel any of those keywords, I get a notification so I can see. And because it's probably something where I would like to contribute, it's really, really good.
Oh, you're a mean spy.
I am.
That's why you always interfere in all those conversations. Where we say the person taking care of our finance is such a mean. Okay, no. But the other thing, as I was saying, is discourse. And I think a big reason why we use Discourse as well is that the one limitation that comes with Slack, unless you decide to pay, is that you only have a limited history. So you can only search through the last 10,000 messages, which translates to maybe half a month to a month worth of messages within our company, at least with all the people that are using it.
Yeah, what is also an advantage of Discourse for certain users over Slack is that it's, of course, much more structured. Because in Slack, of course, you have the search, but...
Maybe let's explain what Discourse is. I don't remember who was developing it, but you can read it then. We will link it in the show notes. But it's pretty much, or the goal that they have set to themselves is to create a forum for the next upcoming 10, or for the upcoming decade, pretty much. Forum sounds terrible, so we shouldn't start with that. But pretty much it's a new way of having structured data combined with discussions, I would say. So it's not like Wiki. So it's not like Wikipedia where you just have an article. It's not like a forum where you only have an age-long thread till you finally find the right answer. But it's somewhere in between, built on very cool new technologies. It's all very instantaneous and easy to use. It's responsive, so it works on mobile and it works on browsers very easily. And they left out a lot of those gimmicks that you have in forums, and they pretty much reduced it to the few things that really work. At least they think they really work. And I have to say, so far, I've been very happy with it. So there is, I think, as a user, if you start out there, then you can earn ranks, and the higher your ranks are, the more things you can do within the whole system. So if you're somebody who has edited a lot of articles already, you're allowed to edit other people's articles maybe, and so you become automatically a moderator almost, and all that stuff. You can fine-tune this, and it's, of course, you can also turn it all off, but I have to say, by default, it's set up in a very nice way that it can deal with a lot of people, and you can easily get rid of annoying trolls and all that stuff. So they have put a lot of thought in how this goes, which doesn't really translate so much to us because we use it internally. So it's not totally necessary, but it's good if you set it up as an open platform.
Is it so it's easy enough to set it up as an open platform for a certain purpose as well as a closed internal platform?
I think by default it's meant as an open platform but we use it as a, you can use it as a login or invite only platform, which we are doing, and we use it as our internal knowledge sharing platform. So all the things maybe that are discussed on Slack when we finally come to an agreement on some things of how we want to run our company, then we create an article within Discourse. So it's really easy to browse. Everyone can change. And then you can also always make the first post of whatever topic there is. You can actually make into a wiki article. So there then all the people can attribute to. So what you can do is also, basically you can always, almost always only check the first article within any conversation, at least the way we use it, and you know everything that you have to know about that topic, which makes it very useful. Yeah. Yep. And you can host it yourself. So you can take care of your data and all the security things yourself. You can get it as a service. Or what we do, we use it within DigitalOcean. So it's a cloud provider that's really nice, where you pay servers by the time you're using them pretty much. And they're really simple to set up. And it's almost a one click setup for that whole discourse system. Or there's a couple of steps, but you can just tweet it up. There's tutorials for that they will link as well. And then you have your own installation running and you have full control over everything there is, and no user limitation, no nothing. It's just yours, and it's easy to update and everything. It's a very nice tool, and I can highly recommend it for knowledge sharing platforms internally, or just if you're looking into setting up a forum for whatever interest you have, for example, Thinkara phishing, then Discourse is also a good tool to use.
But I think we are almost at the end of this episode now.
We are. Maybe let's mention one last thing. Always that famous one last thing. But next weekend, or this weekend actually, the restaurant day is coming up, which is an event that's started in Finland. But by now it's a lot of cities throughout Europe at least are taking part in it, which means that people can just own a restaurant for a day pretty much, which means that you find some spot on the streets and you just prepare food there or drinks, and you can sell it to people who are around. So basically the whole town turns into a big restaurant street, which is a beautiful event, and it's around since a few years, and we have wanted to take part in it since such a long time. And this Sunday we have finally decided to make our own stand there. So there will be a Buddy's Pizza Bistro. As we are Italians, we have to make pizza, and we will make them with a Scandinavian/Finnish twist, as we are teaming up with some Finnish friends of ours. And we will also link the Facebook event in the show notes. If you have time on this short notice, we are happy to welcome you to our pizza stand and get to know you in person. This has been the episode. We hope you enjoyed it. If you want to know about future episodes, please subscribe to this podcast under booncon.com/podcast, and also follow our Twitter account @booncon, where we will always announce the next episodes. Thanks for listening. Bye-bye.
Bye-bye.